Hello and welcome to SOC Unlocked, Tales from the Cybersecurity Frontline. I'm Mick Leach, your host and guide on this exciting journey into the SOC universe. In each episode, I chat with various cybersecurity professionals about the latest in industry news, emerging threats, practical strategies to keep your organization safe, and more. And this week, we are excited to have an old dear friend of mine, Nikki Milburn. Nikki, welcome to the podcast.
Appreciate the invite.
Absolutely. Well, listen, you guys know, our longtime listeners, first we like to unpack and learn a little bit about Nikki and her journey into cybersecurity. It's an interesting one. I'll just tell you that up front. Then we'll kind of dig into the past, the present, and the future of security operations. And then we'll move on to some career guidance, figure out what Nikki thinks we should be doing to get into the break into cybersecurity. And then lastly, we'll kind of do our one last thing. And with that, Nikki, tell us about yourself. Tell us your current role and how you got here.
Total fluke that I ended up in cyber. So I graduated from a rural high school, president of the FFA, was going to go to OSU to become an agricultural science teacher. Over the summer, I got a summer gig before school started, and it was taking phone orders.
Okay.
So people would call in from a magazine. They'd want to order stuff. You'd try to sell them things. Turns out I'm not a salesperson.
You and me both.
But I was really good at the computer side of it, to be able to search for things, put things in a contextual format for others to be able to find what they're looking for. So what had actually happened is they said, hey, you are not good at sales. How about you actually start running our phone system for our telemarketing department, which was reel-to-reel leads.
Oh, my goodness.
So we would get giant reels of leads from credit card companies. And I would have to sit there and unload all of those leads into the system, make sure it's up and running. It was a ROM switch. It doesn't get much older.
How is this even possible? You are not old. You're not even older than me, I don't think. Like, how is this possible?
Late 90s, that's what they were running. Little DAT tapes for backups every night. So yeah, I kind of progressed through there, did a lot on their computer systems and worked there. Went to Nationwide, learned a lot. PCI came along and it's like, oh boy, access control. I love it. I was on the financial side to start with. So it was, how are we securing those interactions? Do we have the appropriate access control in there? Are we compliant? Went from there to, I call it Nationwide proper, but the fuller Nationwide, working on security projects. Security resonated with me. It made sense. I get it. So implementing projects there, left there. Went to L Brands on the retail side, doing engineering in the identity space, which I do kind of geek out on identity. That one to me is nearest and dearest to my heart. It's hard to break something without an identity. It's hard to deploy something without an identity. So it's kind of core to a lot of things. And then a huge opportunity opened up for me to come to Franklin County to build a security program. It is not often in our careers that we have the opportunity to walk into an organization and build a program. Mm. Kind of starting from scratch where we're doing some firewall and then patching and antivirus was what we did. Now we kind of do the full stack, all pillars, and we've grown from me plus two to me plus 14.
Wow, that's fantastic. What a growth.
6 years. 6 years to grow that, and I'm looking at new capabilities in the coming year. So it's that opportunity has opened my eyes a lot to a lot of different things. And what's really, really cool about it is I have the opportunity to do something I'm passionate about. Love security, love doing it for the right reasons, but I do it for the community. Mm. So everything I do is to ensure that the services for the agencies are available to the people. So 911 works.
And we all appreciate it. Thank you.
Being able to ensure that the 911 system is up and they can do dispatching and election is secure. These are huge things to be able to contribute to the community. It's been a massive opportunity.
Yeah. So I want to double click into that because something you said there just really triggered, especially right now, right? Mm-hmm. So the election it falls under like the all of the things that go around the election system, the voting and the systems, the machines, all of that is under your purview there at Franklin County Data Center?
It is within the data center. We do all of their hosting. The machines they use, they have to be off network completely.
Sure.
They don't get to touch the network at all. So those stored lock key, Republican, Democrat keys, the security around an election and not just the physical, but cyber side of it is pretty intense.
Yeah.
But in the state of Ohio, every county is responsible for the election equipment and the software that they use, process that day. Now, the Secretary of State has authority over those and mm-hmm. putting those guidance and directives out there, but each county is responsible to adhering to those.
Fascinating. Man, you really are on the front lines of like protecting freedom. So I love it. And so, Nikki, what is your current role? You said you're at the Franklin County Data Center. What do you do there?
I am the Chief Information Security Officer for the county and the Chief Privacy Officer.
And keep me honest here, the Franklin County, it's bigger than just that one county. So Franklin County, for those listeners not familiar with the middle of flyover country in Ohio, Franklin County is where Columbus, Ohio, it is the capital of Ohio. So Franklin County is kind of the most, the kind of the busiest and most important of the counties in terms of networking and all of those kinds of things. So, but it's more than that too, isn't it, Nikki?
For us, like you said, it is the largest county in Ohio. We provide services to 1.3 million people.
Wow.
So when you look at our customer base, putting it in kind of private sector terms, it's 1.3 million that we are offering services to across 44 different agencies. It could be the Office on Aging, Veterans Office.
Veterans Affairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Animal Control, Elections, Commissioner, Auditor, Treasurer, all of those. There's 44 different agencies and boards that we provide that to. We do cross lines every now and then and do collaboration with other counties. So when you look at an election and somebody lives in this weird little town where half the town is in one county and half is in the other county, we are the primary county and their reporting comes up through us and then goes to the state when it comes gotcha. To that. So we do kind of blur lines there. The municipalities within here are all separate, but they can call on us at any time just as, hey, we need help doing something. Can you help us and provide expertise? Because we do have a decent amount of resources. The state is right outside our door. So if we need anything from the state of Ohio and their agencies, we can easily call on them. It's a little different. It's like being a giant MSP.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That's wild. That's why, you know, we often don't think about how state and local governments operate in that sort of MSP kind of a role where you're actually providing services, security services in your case, to a wide variety of smaller agencies within the county. And I think when I pop by in January to visit you guys and speak with your team, I think you said that you also provide certain services even to other counties because you have expertise in-house that they simply don't have available. Is that right too? How many counties do you support?
It's really on an as-needed basis that we will support them. We've had some of the other counties directly located beside us that have reached out and said, hey, we have this going on. Can we borrow some resources? Absolutely. Here's the expertise. We may not be hands on keyboard, but we will walk you through it. Just to kind of keep that line there of it is your stuff, but we can tell you how, but I'm not going to do it for you just from a liability standpoint.
No, makes sense. Makes sense. And what a great service to be able to offer to other counties. Man, I love it. I love it. So what a great journey. I mean, from being on phones and realizing sales isn't your thing. It's definitely not my thing either. My own sales department would tell me that as well. Good security guy, terrible salesman. So I love that you grew from that, found your way into security, and then getting the opportunity to build a program from the ground up. That you're right, that is a rare privilege that we just maybe get once or twice in an entire career. Yeah. And
timing is huge of where you're at in your career and the opportunity that presents itself. It's like the stars aligning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and then And the challenge with that, I mean, I think there are a lot of opportunities there to do those things, but getting the ones where you're going to get the support from leadership to come in and actually build the program right, you know, bring in the technologies that you need, bring in the people that you need. Too often I see folks get a similar opportunity call, and as they kind of dig into it during the interview process, they find out, well, you know, there's not a lot of budget for it. There's not a lot of desire to increase headcount. So basically what we're hiring you to do is come in and be like a one person or two person security shop. And that's just a really, really challenging situation to go into. So
it was definitely a challenge. I didn't know what to expect coming in, but knew that if we make the right case, and it's not through fear or anything, but it's enabling them to do their jobs better, to service the people better, faster, more securely, rather than, oh my gosh, you're going to be breached. That doesn't work. But if we tell them, this is how we can make it better for your constituents, this is how we can make your workforce more efficient. They don't have to do these things anymore because we did single sign-on. You got one set of credentials. MFA, we made it easy for you.
Yeah.
So being able to tell the story in business terms has been huge. That has garnered more success than any fear that I could ever put into people to get money or to get resources.
Leaders, I hope you're listening out there, because this is growing from a practitioner into a leader and now helping, you know, an organization understand how this benefits them. I love that. I think that is the right way to make the case, having data-driven decisions, helping to bring data to the table to help folks understand what we're up against. And then, like you said, helping people understand how this is going to actually make their lives easier. We've for years been known as sort of the Department of No in security. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do that either. What I think we need to be doing, and I think you would agree, Nikki, is that, you know, we need to be offering solutions, not just, no, you can't do that. Instead be saying, well, I like what you're trying to do. Here's a way I think we can do that in a really secure way, or a way that empowers the business and yet, you know, protects it at the same time.
That is kind of one of those stances we've, taken with the different agencies. Bring us your problems. What are you trying to accomplish? Don't bring me, this is the solution you think you need. Tell us what your issue is. We'll bring the right infrastructure, the app dev team to the table, the security team to the table, and we'll start putting together. This is a really good secure solution that is extremely usable, reliable, and stable for you. Let us help you by doing that. Give the burden of technology to those that love and relish in it. As opposed to those that's like, let me go shop for some software. It kind of does what we need. No, let us do what we do best and thoroughly enjoy to deliver something to you. And you can say, oh, wow, that does meet all of my needs, plus some future needs. Fantastic. Let's deploy this. We've already made it through the security, the technical side, the development side. This is what you will actually enable you to do your business better.
Yeah. So what I think I'm hearing you say is talking about bringing requirements to the table, and then letting the security professionals choose the right solution that meets the business requirements. You know, what an impactful idea! What a novel idea! It is, and I laugh because I, like you, I happen to have worked at Nationwide, and it was at Nationwide where I really saw that kind of come to fruition best, where, you know, we had some teams that would buy solutions, buy software, and then just sort of throw it over the fence to the engineering and operations teams and say, hey, we bought this. You're welcome. If you could just have that going, that'd be great. And we're like, what is this? What problem were you trying to solve? Did you realize we already had, you know, a different solution in place that might meet 70% of our needs here? And then maybe we tack on something smaller that helps fill the gap. But yeah, I love the idea that we start with the problem we're trying to solve, wrapping business requirements around that problem, and then finding solutions lastly that meet those requirements. How powerful is that? So awesome. Well, listen, what an amazing journey to go from kind of a practitioner, well, really just a, you know, well outside of the security realm, then eventually becoming into a practitioner, becoming an IAM engineer, and then, you know, reaching sort of the mountaintop, if you will, in terms of our role structures, you know, as a CISO. So that's fantastic. What a journey.
A lot of really cool folks along the way and still work within those relationships and bounce questions off people. I think the relationship building that you do along your career can last a lifetime and it can be invaluable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, shoot, this podcast is an example of that. I mean, you know, many of the folks that we have had the opportunity to chat with, I came up in security with these folks, including Nikki, right? We were cutting our teeth at the same time, learning and making mistakes and learning some more and breaking things and going fast and having to slow down and fix things. But you're right. It is those relationships that are so important. There are still people to this day that if I get into a situation where I'm like, man, I need someone who is just an expert in Python to help me just understand what I'm looking at here. You know, Stephen Dumont is going to get that call, right? You know, I'm going to reach out to Nikki for all kinds of things. And likewise, right? There's lots of folks. Cultivate those relationships and then keep them because they will last long after you move through different roles, you leave companies, you come back. These people will be the people that you call on for your entire career.
Even at our relationship, we haven't worked together in over 10 years.
No, we haven't. Yet we still stay in touch, right? Yeah. On LinkedIn. I know you would reach out to me to ask me to come speak to your department. In fact, I've had a couple opportunities to do that, and I'm grateful for that. And then I reached out to you and offered help not long ago. I have a dear friend who's part of a ransomware company, and there was an issue with not your organization, but something adjacent that we thought might be able to help with. So, you know, that's what community is about.
We are not competing with each other. It's we have to foster and help each other as best we can because we're all fighting the same fight, regardless of public, private entity doesn't matter. You don't wish it upon anyone. So there's nothing competitive there.
I love it. Yeah, yeah. My company could be in the same industry as yours. And yes, our companies kind of compete against one another. However, there is no reason why we cannot share intelligence back and forth. Because if I can make you safer some today, in the future, you may be able to share intel that protects me from an emerging threat that we just don't even know about. I mean, I think that's what the concept of the ISACs was all about. Creating like, you know, FS-ISAC and H-ISAC, the Health ISAC, and there's a bunch of them. And they are great organizations that everyone should be a member of. And then contribute. I love
it. For us here at the county, it is MSISAC, so multi-state, and then EIISAC, so election infrastructure.
See, I'm learning.
Sharing across each of those of things that are hitting the local government and then things that are specific to elections will come through there as well.
I love it. I'm learning. I did not know that either one of those existed. So fantastic. All right. Well, let's dive right in. I think we're cruising right along in terms of timing. Sorry, I get passionate about this stuff, especially with old friends. Into the past, the present, and future. So, Nikki, can you share? And you don't, please. I don't want to get sued. I don't want you to get sued. I don't want anybody to get fired. Right. So, change the names to protect the innocent or not so innocent. But can you share maybe a story about an attack or, you know, investigation or something along those lines that was interesting that you've performed over the years and how your team handled it?
Has there been times where there were attacks on the websites? Absolutely. It carries a lot of impact when something happens to a government website. If it is not available, people are creating their own stories of what is going on. So anybody that's like, oh my gosh, they're doing this. They're keeping us out. They're not informing us. It's like, actually, it's just an outage. This isn't that big a deal. But other times, we have to act quickly. Our timeline and our communications have to be very different than in the private sector. So a lot of the research, investigation, forensics goes on to my team. I spend more of my time talking and educating on what is going on. Here are our next steps. This is what you can expect. Being a government entity, we have a lot of acronyms that we have to work with when something does happen. So we have a great relationship with our local FBI, which most people don't get that opportunity.
No.
And then you have the Secretary of State's office. They have a vested interest in our website because it houses election information. So we have kind of the whole gamut. And we are doing a lot of the communications. Every time something comes up, okay, here's new information. We have to rally everyone together and do the communication. So a lot of that falls upon myself, and just to provide the head cover for my team to do their job.
Sure.
There are, as a government entity in Ohio, there is the Ohio Cyber Reserve that you can call upon should you get into trouble. And a lot of municipalities, counties within Ohio don't know they can. Now, granted, you have to go through your local EMA to get them deployed, but it goes all the way up to the governor. They sign their orders. They show up within, we put them off to 24 hours, but wow, they wanted to be on site within two.
Okay.
I'm like, okay, guys, it's not that big a deal. And it's a Sunday.
Right.
I'm not going to be on site. So a lot of it is the orchestration around it and the team doing what they do. One of the weirdest things that we have seen is somebody will just keep putting in, who am I? Okay, that tells us you're an amateur.
Yes.
If you have to keep putting in, who am I?
Yeah, yeah.
But they can, because it's easy.
Yes, of course.
You can buy code anywhere to do this. AI can now write the code for you. So that is going to be a massive challenge to go forward, is how easy it is to buy ransomware and to buy the code and to have the scan of it. Our job is going to get a lot harder, a lot harder.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and what a great bridge then, because, you know, as we talk about the past, present, future, what do you think, in your opinion, especially with the breadth that you are responsible for and the visibility that you have across a massive organization like the Franklin County Data Center? So what is the biggest challenge facing security operations today?
Us having the time to do it and do it quickly, because they're attacking all the time. They're looking for that one way in, they're scanning ports, they're looking, and they have code readily available to them that we've never seen. So our time to be able to determine what they're doing and stop it, restore all of that, the time is what's going to hurt us, because everything is changing so fast, it'll be difficult to keep up with it.
That's crazy. To your point, just a couple of weeks ago, I was out at Las Vegas speaking at Falcon, the CrowdStrike convention, and they had shared that it's currently for this, I think it's last year, 62 minutes to break out from initial like compromise to the ability to move laterally through the network, mm-hmm. where they've already escalated privileges, they're able to move around. It's 62 minutes. To go, and the challenge there, to your point, is our ability to respond is typically, and they had some rough numbers, but they correspond with my experience over the years, is that it's about 4 hours of dwell time for like an alert to sit in a SIM before an analyst will get to it. And that's a pretty average, pretty broad number, but still. And exfiltration happens on average in about 6 hours. So if it's 62 minutes to break out, and now we're moving laterally, we're getting to the actions on objective, they're getting to what they want, and it's 4 hours for an analyst to even start the investigation. They're going to engage IRT, their incident response team, in like, you know, 5 hours. And by the time we get the right folks involved, is typically 5.5, close to 6 hours. And at 6, that's when we're actually seeing the exfiltration occur, which is kind of the game over. So from a timing perspective, it is really, really hard, because the bad guys continue to shrink the time in terms of the attack.
Oh, it's definitely moving very quick. It would be difficult to respond. And I think that's where partnerships with your vendors comes into play, of how do we do this better and faster using the tools that we have, or what's on your roadmap, and being able to provide input into that. We need fast automation of, if you see this, we need it shut down. If you see this, it needs to be isolated immediately. Being able to have that working relationship with the vendors that you use, because clearly you have an inherent amount of trust with them. You have their products. So clearly they're there for a reason. Leverage that relationship, kind of their roadmap. Here are the pain points we have. This is what I'm going to be facing. How can you help me? Yeah. How can you decrease our time to respond? Segment it off so that we have time to respond before it goes wild.
Yeah. And you said something in there that I want to kind of, dig a little bit more into, is that automation, the automated response. We've had, you and I both have had capabilities that offered automated response, but we didn't have the confidence in allowing the tools to do their job. They were way more capable than we would allow them to be. It would almost like be giving the keys to a Ferrari to a 16-year-old. You're like, go out and, have fun. Mm-hmm. The car's way more capable than their skills will allow for them to take advantage of. And I think we have done that for years. How do we build the confidence and let the tools do what they're capable of doing? I let me give an example. I've seen solutions that can detect like an account takeover of like a web account, like an email account, your Microsoft account. That threat actor logs in, they get through MFA, whatever, they're in. Now, bad actor in the wire, they're inside. And we can detect that. And yet, most of the companies I've been at over the years have been too afraid to allow the automation to detect and respond. It'll detect an alert, and then we'll wait for an analyst to look at it. They'll confirm that which the tool accurately diagnosed from the beginning, and then we'll manually take the remediation steps we could have done automatically. How do we build the confidence to let the tools do what we bought them to do?
We are actually going through that right now with a solution that we're looking at, as far as how far do I let this tool go? Do I let it isolate critical servers because it seems something odd? Or do I tell it yes to this point and then no there? And that is the balance that we're playing. But it really takes us getting comfortable with, we don't know everything.
Yes.
We are not going to be as fast as that is to respond. So put it in business context. If I isolate this server, what happens? Is it the CAD, like 911? Does it go down? No? Okay, cool. Do my domain controllers, do they go down? No? Okay, cool. Have a ball. Isolate it, let it do what it does. Because what that's doing is it's stopping it from making it to those critical assets if you let it do its job. So there is risk and reward, and we need to look at it more from that aspect than we do, I know better than this tool does. Somebody's going to get mad. Like, you know what? They're going to be more mad if you let that run wild. It's a risk decision that you have to make and be willing to stand behind and say, I'm willing to isolate this environment and have it sit there and not be available for so many hours to protect the rest of the environment from something.
Yeah. I love it. I love what you said. It comes back to us being risk professionals, right? We are in the business of risk, measuring and managing it. And so understanding and then being willing to break low impact things, and I think that'll get us there.
Isolate an endpoint, have a ball. That's 100%. Exactly. I will deal with that all day long. servers, let's talk. There's a couple of them that, this could be very bad if it's a false positive. But if you let it run on the rest of them, boy, that's a big win. That's time to remediate shrinks significantly to where we're not looking at 6 hours for human eyes on it. We are looking at minutes and it's done. And then the human eyes have time to respond to it, look at it, do their legwork in an environment that has been protected from everything else. So I no longer have to worry about, did they move over there? Did they move over there? Where are they at now? Searching through logs, looking for alerts. Your time to respond decreases significantly. And I think that's important that we let them do what they do for that reason.
Yeah. Awesome. Looking forward, if I ask you to sort of bring your crystal ball out and gaze into it and tell me the future, first start with, you know, who's going to win the Super Bowl this year so we can bet wisely. But in terms of the cybersecurity landscape, for security operations in particular, where do you think things are going? What's coming down the pike?
I would say in the foreseeable future, you'll see a lot more tools coming out claiming AI, but it's really just automation.
Mm.
But they're kind of using the buzzwords, and it's stuff that's already been there, but they're putting a new lens on it to sell it to those who don't fully understand. Either way, I think it's a positive to have that automation built in. We'll probably see that, but it'll be under the guise of AI for some. But others truly will start integrating AI into it, which is great if it can do some of the thinking we do, but it will never fully replace human eyes.
Mm.
But it's a tool in the toolbox for some. So I would say we would see that coming. Beyond that, I think those are kind of the big ones.
I agree. And I too have seen this. There's been a lot. I mean, AI has been the sort of the keyword, the phrase that pays for the last 2 years. Before that, it was zero trust. And, you know, we could talk about, you know, the hype cycle that's been around for quite some time. You and I have lived through many, many cycles of it over the years.
I'm not that old.
Well, look, cybersecurity is a compressed time frame. We talked about that, right? So, you know, you don't have to have been around for, look, a lot has happened in a decade. You know, if you think about just even the last 10 years, it's crazy to think about. But fair point. So going, kind of shifting gears a little bit here, if we have some listeners who are like, man, this sounds so cool, I would love to get into what you guys are talking about. Security operations sounds super cool. How do I get in? Do I need to take classes? Do I get certifications? Like, what's the best way in? What advice would you give that person?
Start in IT, whether it's a help desk, an infrastructure team, could be wet while taking classes at the same time. That gives you not really a test bed, but a place where you can learn stuff in class and then also look at it. Now, when I say class, I am probably one of those proponents. It doesn't have to be a 4-year degree.
Mm.
Do something that is meaningful and relevant to the position you want to be in. I can do a lot with skills and abilities, and that carries way more weight and value in the experience that you've had. Yes, I've worked on servers. I've worked on endpoints. This is kind of how they behave. I have some network background. There's a lot that can be done with that. So I would say get a mix. I wouldn't focus on one and just say, I'm going to do nothing but take certs. Well, you still have to have some hands-on. You have to be able to navigate and see what it is. Don't be afraid. Ask friends. Start somewhere. And just kind of keep growing, embrace challenges that are thrown at you. If somebody's like, oh my gosh, I can't get this to work. Oh, okay, well, let's take a look at it and see, but always embrace challenge. Always embrace it.
I love it. I agree. And I think that's where most of my growth has come over the years, right? Is when I have been thrown something that I had absolutely no idea what I was doing. One of my very first examples, I was in the U.S. Army and had been a warfighter. So I was a cavalry scout. And so my job was to sneak and peek and retreat and then report on enemy troops and stuff. And so that was my job. But I ended up working in a different area. I worked in headquarters for a little while, and then they moved me over to the Directorate of Information Management prior to getting out. And I was like, okay, yeah, I mean, I kind of know how to type, so I'm sure it'll be fine. And they handed me Microsoft SharePoint portal server in a box, right? Because back then software still came in boxes. You didn't download it. But they handed it to me in a box. It was on like a CD-ROM. And they were like, we would like for you to become the SharePoint portal server administrator for the entire post. This is Fort Carson, Colorado. And I was like, sure, yeah, no problem. What's SharePoint? And they were like, okay, so we're gonna send you to a class, and then you can do it. I was like, great. The class was like 2 days. I didn't understand almost any of it because they assumed a certain level of like server administration knowledge that I did not have. And so I just nodded, blankly for 2 days, came back, and then just they gave me a server to play with, right? At the risk of showing my age, it was Windows 2000 Advanced Server, brand new, hot off the presses, and had to build that out from scratch, and had absolutely no idea what I was doing. But I will tell you, I grew more in that time frame because I had to struggle and learn. And we had forums, like these forum posts where you could go, bulletin boards, we called them way back. Oh, goodness gracious, I sound like back in my day. So bad. But that's how things were. And you couldn't Google things. And so you did have to ask questions and call the Microsoft helpline and get someone to come and help you. There was no chat program. Would you rather chat with us? No, not really. But no, and you're right. It is those times when you are thrown right into the deep end, and it's sink or swim. And like, we wouldn't be here if we were sinkers, right? We're swimmers. We're going to figure it out. And that's when I grew. Did you have a similar experience or two?
I was handed SharePoint early on in my career, and I was sent to training. It was in Vegas for 3 days.
Did you make it to class?
I did. I took the tram every morning over to, I don't remember what hotel it was hosted at. But yeah,
I've done a training course in Vegas before, and on day one, full class, day two, half class, day three, four people. You know, by the end, it's basically me and an instructor, and everybody else is downstairs in the casino.
One of my first bosses, when I was doing the computer system, he was notorious for signing me up for stuff.
Okay.
Like, oh, you need, an absence tracking system? Yeah, she can build it. Like, she can what? So all right, let me see what I can do. So I built it. I tied it into our workforce management system where we track stuff there, and it consumes it into a database, and then it feeds it to payroll. So I was like, all right, are we done here? He's like, no, guess what? Like, no, I'm going to have you start training all the workforce teams around the world. You need to go to Tijuana in a couple of weeks. Like, I need to what? So yeah, for as much as he signed me up for, that was probably what changed my mindset of, yeah, bring it, I'll figure it out, or I know someone who can help me figure it out. But that mindset was ingrained very early by him.
I love it. Nikki, this has been an absolute blast. What a great conversation. If someone gets to this point in the podcast, first of all, well done. Secondly, if they're like, listen, you guys talked about a lot of stuff, I can only take one thing away from this, what would you have that be?
Be curious. Always be curious about stuff and things that are going on, figuring things out. Keep a curiosity. Don't have the closed mindset. This is not by the book. How else can we do this? Keep an open mind and be curious about things.
I love it. Be curious out there and dive into things you don't know what you're doing. It'll be okay. You'll figure it out.
Absolutely.
I love it. Well, Nikki, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I really appreciate it. It's good to get together with you again.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been fun.
Awesome. Well, listen, folks, this has been SOC Unlocked, Tales from the Cybersecurity Frontline. I am your host, Mick Leach, reminding all you cyber defenders out there to keep fighting the good fight. You're the tip of the spear, so stay sharp. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to like and subscribe and check out our other SOC Unlocked episodes. We'll see you all next time. Thank you.